Okay, good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today. First of all, I'm so deeply appreciative that you were willing to adjust the time together with me for a good reason and a good conflict. But I'm grateful. Every time we change a time, I wonder whether I'll be sitting here alone. And every time people show up, I'm shocked, but amazingly gratified, and I'm so happy to be able to learn together as we launch our new year and a new cycle through learning Chumash. The amazing thing is, you can learn Chumash every year of your life. The same text, the same words, the same story, the same narrative, but the world is different and you're different. We mature, we gain wisdom, life experience, the world around us is changing, and we see in these sacred words, we see in our timeless Torah messages that impact us for today. And tragically, sadly, there are way too many Jews whose knowledge of the Parsha and Chumash is fixed from when they were in third grade. Whatever they heard from their teacher, the Malamed, the Parsha Dvar Torah they came home with, that's where they're stuck. But to come every week to explore, to ask questions, to be curious, inquisitive, to think critically about what we're learning, it's what makes our Yiddishkeit so special. So I'm so grateful that you join on this journey of learning Parsha Perspectives together. I want to thank, as always, our very generous series sponsors, our dear friends Becky and Avi Katz and family, in loving memory of Becky's father, our learning is Leina Nishmas, David Grossman, David Ben Menachem Munish. This morning's shiur is also sponsored by Amanda Lyons. As a thank you for the weekly learning, for the Refuah Shleima of Chayalei Bas Mary, and all those affected by the terrible attack that took place in Manchester over Yom Kippur, certainly wish them a Refuah Shleima and a speedy recovery. We're on page 30 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, and we have the privilege this week of learning together Parshas Noach. So let's go. Eila told us Noach ish tzadik tamay bedorosav es ha'elokim misaleich Noach. We could spend at least an hour on the opening pasuk, but don't worry, we won't. We won't. Tempted to, but we won't. Eila told us these are the offspring of Noach, and the Torah doesn't list the offspring of Noach. Already by the second parsha in the Torah's got a healthy case of ADD. It started a thought, and then got distracted by its own thought and doesn't come back to the thought until the second pasuk actually gives us the offspring. So why do we introduce these are the offspring of Noach only to forget what we were talking about and to in fact not list the offspring until the next pasuk? And we interrupt it with what? Ela told us Noach. These are the offspring of Noach. And who are the offspring of Noach? Noach. Why do we say his name twice? I've shared before, but I find it so powerful. I mentioned it last night at a shloshim for our dear friend Phil Zimmerman, that there are people who live for their children and grandchildren, and that's a wonderful attribute, to take nachas and to have pride if one is blessed to have future generations. But never to do so at the neglect of our own legacy, of our own reputation, of our own name, of cementing our own place in this world. Ela told us Noach, the biggest offspring, the biggest legacy to Noach left was Noach Ish Tzadik. His name, his reputation, who he was. What we leave is our name, is our reputation. That's what we give birth to. So we think, oh, my children, my grandchildren, they're the ones who will give me nachas. What about giving yourself nachas? Living such a life and earning such a reputation that you give yourself nachas. And what made him a tzaddik? He was tamim. He was pure and innocent. Again, we could get into each of these words much deeper. We're not going to. But tamim, like tamim tiyem Hashem Elokecha, we learn this in Dvarim. Tamim means to not subscribe to horoscopes and superstition and silliness and narishkeit, but rather im Hashem Elokecha. When are you tamim? Only when im Hashem Elokecha. That you live a life with emuna, you embrace your place, you are where you're meant to be. Hashem puts us in those places, in those circumstances. We'll talk and see that more in this parasha. When are we tamim? When are we whole and when are we complete and when are we pure? When we're not speculating, we're not guessing, we're not predicting, we're not anticipating, we're not controlling, we're not micromanaging. When are we tamim? When are we leaving a whole and a pure life? Im Hashem Elokecha. So Noach was this person who was tamim. Like the tam at the Seder that we say somewhat negatively about, that tam is simple, but there's a beauty to simplicity. We've overcomplicated. And sometimes we need to simplify. And the person who simply lives a life with Hashem, they're simply a mensch, simply a good person, the will of Hashem, living a mission. That was Noach. Esa Elokim hisalech Noach. Esa Elokim, God hisalech Noach. Translate these words. That clause, that phrase is Esa Elokim hisalech Noach. What do the words mean? Noach walked with God. That's how Art Scroll translates it, but it's not what it says. They did so because it's hard to translate it differently. Es Elokim Hisalech Noach. To God walked Noach. I don't know how to translate it better. But this morning, Baruch Hashem, the reason we delayed, my son, Bo Bayom, today is his Hebrew birthday, he turned 13, bar mitzvah, so at his yeshiva at school, Baruch Hashem, we had a beautiful day. He led the daven, it was a beautiful moment, and a beautiful morning, for which I have boundless gratitude. So Rabbi Zolden, the head of the middle school, spoke, very sweet, and he quoted Rabbi Victor Miller. What is Es HaElokim? I see, I was preparing for the parsha shir. Among other reasons, I went. Es HaElokim is Halech Noach. His Halech, what form of the verb is that? Hitpael, it's reflexive. Noach wasn't born, this tzaddik, from his kepala to his fitzalach. His Halech, he transformed himself into a person who walked with God. It wasn't a coincidence and it wasn't an accident. He wasn't born that way. He learned, he cultivated, he conditioned himself. His Halech, reflexive. He transformed himself and cultivated himself. It's not easy, it's hard. You know, it's easy to talk about Hashem when you're in the shul. When the sitter's open, the tehillim's open. It's easy when you're davening our heart out to release hostages and thanking Him with our heart out that they were released, the 20 living our home and back with their families should continue to recover and feel well. And those who are unfortunately no longer with us should be returned as well. But what about when you're living life, when you're in traffic, or the business deal goes wrong, or your spouse or child does something you didn't want them to do? Are you still his halech? Do we transform ourselves in those moments to realize, Hashem, you're in charge, you're in control, I surrender, I submit? So Noach was surrendering to Hashem. Rabbi Sachs in his Chumash, I think it's now available. Yes? Okay, good. I get no commission, maybe a little donation to BRS from Koren, but we quote it every week because it's beautiful Chumash. And Rabbi Sachs, in the introduction to the Parsha, describes, Parshas Noach brings to a close the 11 chapters that precede the call to Avram and the beginning of the special relationship between the descendants and God. So Parshas Noach is the end of, if you had to break up Torah, Bereshis and Noach are written for the whole world. And with Lech Lecha in the introduction to Avram, we now get particular about the Jewish people. Avram, by the way, may not have been Jewish. That's a separate topic for another time. I think we've spoken about that. Believe it or not, the Parshas Drachim, the Mishnah Melech holds that Avram did not have Kedushas Yisrael. Avram is the first Ivri, he's the first Hebrew, but he couldn't have counted for a minion. That's a pretty harsh thing to say about our forefather that we begin the Amidah with. Why? What defines a Jew? You had to have stood at Sinai, at Har Sinai. To have Kedushas Yisrael, the sanctity of a Jew, is to be obligated and bound in mitzvahs. Avram did so voluntarily, but according to this interpretation, the Parshas Drachim, the Mishnah Melech, because he wasn't commanded, he didn't have Kedushas Yisrael, technically he wasn't a Jew, but he is our forefather in that he introduces or promulgates ethical monotheism. He's the first Hebrew, he's Av Hamon Goyim. All that story, that journey begins next week. With Noach, we get the 11 close of Bereshis and Noach, the 11 chapters that precede, that tell us what happened in the world. And during these chapters, the Torah gives prominence to four stories. Adam and Chava, Cain and Hevel, Noach and the generation of the flood, and the Tower of Babel. Each represents another step in the maturation of humanity. The first thing we learn as children is that our acts are under our control. Personal responsibility. Not that someone made me do it, I couldn't help it, I take after you, it's my genes, my DNA, my brother, my classmate, This is what Adam and Chava tried to deny when faced with primal failure. Man blamed the woman blamed the snake. The next lesson is that not everything we can do, we may do. Moral responsibility. We cannot say like Cain, am I my brother's keeper? And justify the harm we cause. The world lost last week, Shmini Atzeres, a dear friend and mentor of mine, Rabbi Moshe Howard, Zichrono Livracha. A horrific, horrific tragedy. And an enormous gaping loss and hole for Klal Yisrael. I wrote an article this week, what I would have said if I knew I could have one more conversation with him. He was a very special friend and a mentor to me and to so many others. After October 7th, he said, Cain asked a question. When God said, what did you do to your brother? He says, Hashomer achi anochi? Am I my brother's keeper? Rabbi Howard said, the challenge of our generation post-October 7th is not to ask a question, am I my brother's keeper, but to make a statement, Hashomer Achi Anochi. I am my brother's keeper. That's what it means to change, to transform, to take responsibility, is not to skirt responsibility, is not to say, am I my brother's keeper? But to transform that from a question to a statement. I am my brother's keeper. Whatever it takes, whatever is needed, I will step up, I will step forward. The next stage which we arrive here in our parasha is the realization that we have a duty not just to ourselves, to those on whom we have an influence, collective responsibility. This is the test that Noach fails. The story of Bavel demonstrates the failure of ontological responsibility, the idea that something beyond us makes a call on us. There is an author of being, therefore there is an authority beyond mankind to whom, when acting morally, we respond. This will close the first cycle of the story of mankind, preparing us for the Hashem's call to Avraham, go, lech lecha. So these four stories are four stages of maturation. What are the four stages again? Personal responsibility, Adam and Chava, they blame, they point a finger. Me? No, she gave me to eat. She says, me? No, the snake gave me to eat. And the answer and the antidote is achrayus, personal responsibility. That's lesson of the first story. The second is moral responsibility. Kayin can't say, Hashomer achi anochi, a statement. Hashomer achi anochi, moral responsibility. Then, collective responsibility. Our parsha, Noach. Noach can't say, I built a teva, I saved myself. What about the rest of humanity? What about caring about those around you? And lastly, is ontological responsibility, which is that not only responsibility to the people around us, collective, but ontological, which is a very fancy word to impress you, which means something bigger than ourselves, that Hashem has a plan for us. There's a call that we have to answer. And that is the introduction of our parsha. The Teferet Shmuel, or Shmuel Berenbaum, we're towards the end of our cycle of using his incredible Sefer. I hope they print and publish more of his Torah because it's all been outstanding. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And it's familiar. Everyone who's learned Parshas Noach knows this debate. Rashi quotes, Yesh merabaseinu dorshim oso l'shvach. Some interpret and analyze the opening pasuk favorably, that it's flattering Noach, that it's praising him. Kol shekein iluhay b'dor tzadikim ayatzadik yoser. Noach was a tzadik when he lived in this miserable, corrupt, morally depraved, horrific generation. Imagine if he lived among the righteous, how great he would really be. And some interpret this critically. Yeah, he was pretty good for his generation, but if he were in any other generation, there'd be nothing special or impressive. And before you jump on the bandwagon, I have a dear friend in our community, Parshas Noach, every year he gets very defensive for Noach. He says, Noach gets a bad rap. Could you imagine? The man saved humankind. And still, every year on the anniversary of our reading his story and thanking him, we say, he wasn't special for that generation. Really? We can't just say thank you. 120 years, he built an ark, he saved his family, he saved the world. So we have these two opinions, l'shvach or l'gnai, are we praising or are we criticizing? And Rav Berenbaum asks, what's a question that may be bothering you? How could you possibly interpret that Noach critically? After all, Hashem himself endorses Noach. V'noach matzachin b'nei Hashem. That Noach found favor in the eyes of God. Noach is tzaddik. It's the opening pasuk. Noach is a righteous man. He walks with God. And we're still debating, is he a good guy or a bad guy? We're still debating just how good he is. Just open the Torah, it testifies. The ultimate endorsement of the Almighty. It's a good question, no? Says Rosh Hashanah Berenbaum, Yesh Lomar, Dinei Kasav HaRambam. The Rambam writes in Luchos Deo, Shem Adam Nimtza B'mokom Sherashoy Mokhayev Levroch Mishem Lalechas L'mokom Acher. The Rambam writes that if a person is living among wicked, evil, corrupt people, you got to book out, you got to leave. It's time to go. V'mena Yachol Limtza B'mokom Acher, She'ein Sham Rishoyim, Yivrach lemidbar kidei lo yishpa mimaisa rishoyim. And if you can't migrate to another area, then live in a desert because you have to protect yourself from bad policies and bad people. I saw a house being advertised in our community for sale and it said pre-Mamdani pricing. That was the advertisement. It listed a price and said pre-Mamdani pricing. which may only go up. Because the halacha is, if there are policies, people, bad, then you've got to move. You've got to book out. You've got to exit. You've got to go. But what can or should a person do if they can't go live in the desert? For Noach, the whole world was filled with such moral corruption, there was nowhere to go. So what should he do? Or Rivka Imenu, who was raised by her father Besuel and her brother Lavan. She was a katana, she was a young child. There was nowhere for her to go. So then if a person finds themselves inescapable from a bad place, they have to look inward and ask, why am I here? What's my mission? What's my purpose? What's my moment? What we've been learning about in the Amunah Shir, we finished that chapter from Rav David Abuchatzera, to be an Eved Hashem b'chol matzav shu, whatever matzav, whatever moment we find ourselves in, don't say, I'd serve Hashem if I had a different job and a different spouse and a different neighbor and a different neighborhood and a different bank account and different children and a different, wherever, whatever, what you're going through is your moment. In that matzav, what's your mission? What's your mission? Really, it's to move. If you can't move, then don't feel stuck. Don't feel stuck because you can't move. Say, why? I really should have a new job. I need to look for a new job. I need to get a new job, but I can't for whatever 100 reasons right now. Fine. So in this job, how do I make the best? In this moment, in this matzav, in wherever I find myself. And if a person embraces their place and lives their moment with mission, then you could reach the level of as if you're living in a holy place filled with tzaddikim. If you accept upon yourself even where you are, which may not have the best influences or environment, still I strive to be my best self, then Hashem will help out. Siyata d'shmaya. And we saw this with Rivka. Even though Rivka was raised in a home, in a house of evil, wicked influence, Besuel, Lavan, a place of idolatry, nevertheless, she emerges a young, wholesome, pure, righteous woman who's compared to none other than Sarah Imenu. Similarly, we find about Yaakov. Yaakov has to flee from his brother Esav. He doesn't have the luxury of just going wherever he wants. And he finds himself in what home? The same one that Rivka had to avoid the influence of, namely, Lavan. And what does he do there? Im Lavan Garti, Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti. He lived with Lavan, and yet he observed all 613 mitzvahs. We find it also with Yosef. Yosef is cast, thrust against his will, down to Egypt, in a foreign environment, foreign influence, corrupt, unfamiliar. And what does he do? Hitzliach Hashem biyado. V'Yosef haya b'Mitzrayim, lo'diya tzidkaso shel Yosef. Yosef remains as righteous and wholesome and pure, even in the morally decadent, distorted, perverted place of Egypt, as he was when he was learning at his father's feet. So we see that the Rambam says, if policies, people around you change, if there's negative influence, you got to get out. You got to go somewhere else, even to go to the desert. If you can't, make the most of where you are, find your mission in that matzav, and then it's like you're living among tzaddikim, even where you are. Umamela, now back to our question. Shmuel Berambam asked, Yesh Dorshim Lagnai, are you kidding me? Why would you learn the Parsha to be critical of Noach? The Torah itself endorses Noach wholeheartedly. The Almighty's endorsement. And yet we're going to find a reason and a way to criticize? Why? Listen to this. How many times have you heard that Rashi? You're about to hear something you never heard before in your life. I think. Unless you learned in the Mir Brooklyn, under Rav Shmuel Berenbaum. Umamela, Yesh Lomar, Hayesh Mirabosein Shadoshim was Lignai. Those who darshan lignai, meaning Noach, he was a tzaddik for his generation, but if he lived with Avram, nothing special. If you learn the shvach, it's a bigger gnai. If you learn the part that praises him, in fact, you're criticizing. Why? If you say, if he lived among tzaddikim, he'd be a bigger tzaddik. Zosomer, Shanoach lo, Miatzes kokochos legado rak lafi doro, ulafi mashem emes ayachol legado iloya bedor shal tzaddikim, uve emes Noach miles kvi kokosov, hagam shekhai bedor shal rishoim. To suggest that Noach only would have been better, unimpressive among tzaddikim, could have been better among tzaddikim, is to suggest that Noach couldn't become his best self even among Rishayim. But we see you can. Rivka did, Yaakov did, Yosef did, and before them Noach did. So the reason they're Dorshin L'Gnai is not to be Gnai. The reason that they learn it to be critical is not to be critical, but is actually to compliment that Noach, even among that generation, not he was great for the generation, he was the greatest he could possibly be, even in that bad generation. Don't say he was only good compared to, he was as good as he could get, even only in. If you live your best self when you're living in the best environment, there's nothing impressive about it. It's what you're supposed to do. But if you could live and be your best self even when you're in a bad environment, now we're talking. Now we're cooking with heat. That's impressive. So the reason to learn L'Gnai, he was good compared to his generation, is that in fact, that's not Gnai, that's Shvach. That's praise, not criticism. Because what we're saying about Noach is, embrace your place. We shouldn't become our best selves relative to who we're with. We should be our best selves comparing and competing with ourselves. With ourselves. Don't be satisfied. Minions called for 9. 99% of the people come after 9. So when you get there at 9:05, you're pretty good. You're pathetic if you could be there at 8:59. Don't be relative and compared to other people. Who are we compared to ourselves, our potential, and our best? That's the challenge. That's who we are. And don't say, Noach could have said, look where I'm living. Look at this environment. This whole world is so corrupt. Hashem's doing a hard reboot and reset. And that's who I live among? Forget about it. I might as well also indulge my impulses. He says, no, I must be here for a reason. I have to build a teva. I have to build an ark. I have to save a world. There's something I have to get done. So Tiferes Shmuel really turns this whole sugya on its head. This Rashi, L'Gnai, L'Shvach, he changes it. The reason to darsh L'Gnai, the reason to learn seemingly critically, is not to be critical, but is that the critical view is actually the more complimentary. And the one that Shvach, that's praising the generation, is in fact criticizing him. That's the question. Shvach and Gnai of whom? Noach or the generation? You follow? A beautiful interpretation. Vayolad Noach, Pasuk Yud. We're moving, we're flying now. Vayolad Noach Shlosh Avanim. Noach had 3 sons, Eshem, Escham, Ves Yafes. 3 sons, Shem, Cham, and Yafes. The Halaga Ach Pri Tvua. Do you remember we started learning the Ach Pri Tvua? Who wrote the Ach Pri Tvua? The Liskarov. Who was the Liskarov? Ratzvi Hirsch. Friedman. He was the Rebbe of Reb Shaila of Kerestir. Reb Shaila's father died at a very young age. He went to go live with the Liskarov. And I'm excited and fond to quote, to learn the Sefer, because we went to Liska and we visited the Liskarov this summer, and to Kerestir and Reb Shaila and so on. So he says the following, his beautiful Ach Pri Tvua. Yesh lamar aderech remez diyesh losh en yonam ba'odem shenolod mimenu. He says, you see from here, it's a very chassidish thought, chassidish avart. Noach had 3 sons. Every human being has 3 elements. Shem, Cham, and Yefes. What are they? Echad, Shem. Torah, mitzvos, and ma'isim tovim. Shem, our name, our good name, is the Torah we learn, the mitzvos we do, the good deeds, the character, the integrity, the kind of person that we are. Echad, Cham. What's the Cham? Shemachamim atzmo la'avera. Cham is the heat of passion, the drive of impulse, temptation for avera. The echad is yefes. Ta'ainu ha'dvarim gashmim, rak masha mukhrach lakach. What's yefes? Yofi. What's yofi? Beauty, the physical, the material. Kegon achila shesia sheina mashu mukhrach. Eating, drinking, and sleep. Al cham ne'amar arur kanan shumi banav shal cham. When it comes to avera, cham, Arur Cham. Cursed is the negative animalistic impulse. BFS, when it came to that son, that offspring, that child, that element or component that we all have called Yefes, that draw to material. Yaft Elokim liYefes, gam zehu chashav b'inei Hashem, shekol davar achreichi ugam kein mitzvah, v'lachei nemar ba'alokim shu b'gematria hateva, u'mikom akom yishkon ba'alei shem. When is it Yaft Elokim liYefes? Is beauty good or bad? Is beauty in the aesthetic a value, something we admire, or something that we have no use for? The answer is yes. If it's an end to itself, if you worship and admire the form, the body, aesthetic, then it's a problem. This was our shir on Simchas Torah, where I began, I don't want to get in trouble, but quoting the statistics of cosmetic surgery, Botox, adjustments, procedures that are proliferating and exploding more than ever. And if you think that is gender bias, the biggest growth in that area is among men. And then the second article was how many people are traveling to Turkey to get hair transplants? How many men, some of us clearly have not, are getting hair transplants? And the shir was about this issue of where does simcha, simcha's Torah, where does real simcha come from? And when you pursue and chase, if you're trying to stay young and you're fighting mother time, father time, whoever is the parent of time, you're trying to fight time, you can't slow it down, you're not going to win. Embrace your age, be lucky and happy and grateful to be alive and the accomplishment and the wisdom of what you can show for it. You're not going to win. So then you'll find Menuchas HaNefesh. Yefes, the offspring of Yaft Elokim liYefes. Who's Yefes? Greece, Yavan. Yavan robbed us, Lonachti, the Pasuk. Lonachti was Golas Yavan. There's no Menuchas HaNefesh. You'll never be able to be happy. You'll constantly be looking in the mirror, competing, comparing, chasing, treating, procedures, cosmetics, makeup. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not judging. Enjoy. It's wonderful. Let it make you happy. If you can afford it, undergo it. It's beautiful. Enjoy. Just don't let it define your life or your happiness. Don't let it be who you are, your identity. Where is there room for Yaft Elokim liYefes? When it's Yishkon Ba'al Leshem. Yofi is beauty. Ba'al Leshem is the Beis Medrash of Torah. When the purpose of the beauty is to enhance Torah. So when you want to have a positive appearance, fashion and style, you want to keep up because you want to make a Kiddush Hashem, beautiful. If you want a beautiful home because you want to host parlor meetings and guests and Rabbanim and Torah learning, beautiful. The room, Yaft Elokim liYefes, is when and where, why? When it's Yishkon Ba'al Hashem. Ein Ashkina Shore Ela Ba'al Hashem, Torah Mitzvos U'Maisim Tovim, Azai Zakta Ach Pritvua. That is the Liskarav. A lot more to say about that shir. We didn't do it service just now. But if you want Menuchas HaNefesh, then be happy with what you have. Simcha comes from a satisfaction with our lot in life. V'samachta b'chol hatov. The farmer who brought his bikurim, don't look in the basket of the person next to you. Their fig is so much bigger, their fig is so much juicier and plumper and shines beautifully. My little dried up, pathetic, tiny little microscopic fig, just look in your basket. V'samachta, how can you find simcha? B'chol hatov. That one's got a flowing head of hair, not one gray. I can wear, why me? No, look and be happy with your v'samachta. You want simcha and menuchas hanefesh. Stop competing, comparing, keeping up. Be able to be satisfied and happy with your own lot. Yaft Elokim. Look in the mirror. Beautify in appearance. Stylish. Look good. Nice tie. Nice knot. Ben, you got a nice little pinch. You got to have it all right. Yaft Elokim liYefes. Why? Yishkon Ba'al Hashem. Because you're giving the pashasha. You need a nice pinch. You got to look good. As long as it's Yishkon Ba'al Hashem. Skipping ahead. We have the decree of the flood. The final call. We've learned all this before. When did Noach get in the Teva? Only when it started to rain. Why? Mikatne Yamuna. He was a believer, maybe not a full believer. He was waiting till the last minute. We're critical of Noach. He could have used the platform in order to inspire, to transform, to educate the rest of his generation. He failed. They're called the Menoach. The flood inundates the world for 40 days and 40 nights. We know that that number 40 represents 40 days in the embryo. 40 days Moshe was on Har Sinai. 40 days we have that letter Mem. What is unique and specific about the letter Mem? I'll give you a hint. Every other letter in Hebrew, if you spell out the whole letter, Aleph is Amid, Aleph Lamed Pei, meaning the word Aleph, which is the name of the letter, if you spell the word, it's Aleph Lamed Pei, Aleph, Beis, Beis, Yud, Tav, and so on. Gimel, Mem, how do you spell Mem? Mem, Mem, only its letter. What you see is what you get. The inside is the outside. The Mem, to become pure, transformed, what you see is what you get, is the letter Mem. A mikveh has to be made of, what's the measure? How much water in a mikveh? How many sa? Mem sa, 40. Mem, 40 days Moshe goes up. 40 nights and days of rain. 40 days the baby in the womb before they're not just considered to be embryonic fluid, the arbaim yom of Yetziras Havlad. That number 40 has a lot of significance in our rich tradition. The waters recede. We're on Perek Zayin. The waters recede, before we're up to the waters recede. Perek Zayin, Pasuk, Yud, Gimel. The final call. Yeah, Vayeh Geshem al Haaretz Arba'im Yom Ve'Arba'im Laila. The rain falls 40 days and 40 nights. It sounds like August in Florida. Be'etzam Hayom Hazeh Ban Noach V'Shem V'Cham V'Yefes B'nei Noach. On that day, Noach and his three sons, Ve'eshes Noach, and his wife, what was her name? Nama, Ushloshes Neshevana Vitam Elateva, and the three daughter-in-laws, they all enter the Teva. Why are they listed separately? Why not just say Noach and his Rebbitzin and the Kinderlach? They all came into the Teva. We say Noach and his three sons, then Noach's wife and the three daughters-in-law. Why are they listed separately? Rashi tells us that while the world was being destroyed around them, no Tashmish Amita, intimacy was off limits. Because if there is crisis in the world, you don't indulge in the pleasures of this world. For 2 years, there were people, I don't know about that particular practice, but I do know people in our community who didn't have chocolate for 2 years. Soldiers were fighting on front line. Hostages were held underground. I know a chashav a rav who didn't sleep with a pillow for these 2 years. And there is a tradition that we have that while the Jewish people, while the world is in crisis, we restrict ourselves. We show that we're holding back a little. We're not living life as normal and as usual, and therefore they're listed separately. Why is it Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh? Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. And keep reading. They enter Perek Yud Gimel. Then the Torah continues. All the different animals and the birds and the creepy crawlies, they all enter. Two of every species that had life. Male and female. And Hashem closed the door behind them. Hashem shut it on his behalf. Says Rashi. The people of his generation said, "Ilu anu roim oso nichnas lateva." If we see this guy trying to enter his ark and save himself, anu shovrim oso v'horginos, we would destroy the ark and kill him. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, "Ani machniso le'enei kulam v'nira davar miyakum." Really, that's your threat? Guess what? He's not going to sneak into the ark in the middle of the night. He's going to climb into it in broad daylight. You're all going to watch, and no one's going to do anything. Vayiskor Hashem ba'ado, and indeed, that's how the section ends. Hashem closes the door behind him. Hegin alav shelo shavrua, hekif hateva dubim va'arayos ve'hem horgim bahem. There were wild animals around the entrance. Anyone who tried to attack Noach, they protected these wild animals, protected Noach even from them. V'kasha, lama ratzu lahargo. Hello, Noach is here. Lasos tshuva. Noach, after all, where did he build the teva? Not in the back of the house. He built it on the front lawn so that the whole world would see. Got cited by the HOA over and over and over again. He built it on the front lawn. Why? Rashi quotes, so that they would see and say, "Hey, what are you doing?" Say, "What am I doing? I'm glad you asked. We are not fulfilling the purpose of creation. And God told me he's going to reboot the world. And there's still a last chance. If we all change and transform, We got another chance, and they ignored him. So since Noach tried to inspire them all to do tshuva, v'hem lo ratzu la'asos, ma lahem tluna al Noach. What's their complaint? Why would they try to kill him? He said, hey, everybody, we're still redeemable. We can still keep this thing on track. We can still save ourselves. And they blew him off. So now when he's climbing into his teva, why are they trying to kill him? Why are they trying to kill him? Says Rav Shmuel Berenbaum, she'ilu shelo hayestam kina, ela hayesinas hadas. You know why? In every generation, when there's a beacon of moral clarity, when there's a person or there are people who are living with a moral compass, with moral values, with principles, with faith, then those who don't want that moral conscience try to eliminate. Like the Rambam writes, at the core and at the root of anti-Semitism, and this is not the time, we have spoken about it in the past, why? Anti-Semitism is the world's oldest hatred, and it defies explanation because they hate us when we're rich, they hate us when we're poor. They hate us when we assimilate and integrate, they hate us when we isolate. They hate us when we're on top, they hate us when we're down. They hate us when we're loud and boisterous, and they hate us when we're quiet. It defies explanation. So what's the core and source of anti-Semitism in the world? The Rambam writes, because hey, makirim ba'amitus emunaseinu. We are, or at least we are meant to be, the moral conscience of the world, living righteous and virtuous lives. And when you want to indulge in your most base animal lowest selves, you don't want that goody two-shoes around, that example, that honor society, that model student, you don't want that person around. Why does the model student, the honor society, get bullied in school? Why do they get a noogie and thrown in the locker and a big wedgie? Why does that happen to that student? Leave him alone. Let him succeed. What are you being picked on? Because you're making the rest of us look bad. And you're making the rest of us feel bad. And we don't like to have you around. And in fact, that's what the Gemara says. Why, Nikra Shmo Shel Ahar Shenit Alav Torah Sinai? Why was the mountain from which the Torah was given called Sinai? Shemisham Yatsa Sina La'olam. Because from that mountain, hatred came to the world. They hated us still since we stood at the mountain. Har Sinai, Sina. Sina's hatred. Sinai, Har Sinai. Misham Yarda Sina La'olam. Since we stood at Sinai, hatred has been against us in this world. That's not to make us feel better about it. That's not to make you feel less worried about it. But it is to help us understand a little bit where maybe some of it comes from, and to not be grateful for it, but to be proud. If you hate me because hopefully I'm living a morally straight, honorable life, we're a moral conscience, a faithful people, living righteous, principled lives. We're living for eternity, not for the here and now. We are a people with a rich history and a rich destiny. We've defied all the laws of history and all of the odds. And we're still here. We're still here. We've been beaten and we've been persecuted and we've been expelled. And we didn't come anywhere and say, now we're entitled. Now you owe us. You know what we said? We're ready to rebuild. We're ready to go. And you know, other people don't like that. Other people don't like that. Because what does it say about them? So this is the source. Memela gam anshei dor amabel yadu ha'emeshe bedarko shanoach she'ovet as Hashem. Avroshayim afilu ha'pischo she'genem enum chozrim. That's why they wanted to kill him. Goody two-shoes, God's favorite, moral conscience, man of faith and principle. We're all violating boundaries. That's why, by the way, the mabul came. The mabul is mida keneged mida, measure for measure. Why? Where does a flood come from? A flood is when the water doesn't respect the boundary of land. The earth, the globe, we have seas and oceans and rivers, and we have dry land. And there's supposed to be a barrier between them. The chof, the shore, is the barrier between the ocean and the land. Rabbeinu Bachaya says, the word chuppah comes from the word chof. When you stand under the chuppah, the chasan and kala, the bride and the groom, this is one of those bonus Sheva Brachas Torah for you. So if you need to speak at a Sheva Brachas, pay attention. The chuppah is a boundary around the Chasan and Kala. On the one hand, open on four sides, welcoming and warm and inviting. But on the other hand, there's now a boundary around the two of them, setting the two of them off from the world. They have a home. They have a relationship. They have an intimate connection. They are a unit. They are lebasar echad. Chupa milashan chof, like the beach, the shore that stops the ocean from the land, the chupa from the world around. Back to our regular schedule program. So we have water and we have dry land. What happened with the flood? The water ran all over the land and it covered the whole land. There was no boundary. There was a breach of the boundary. It was breached. When there's a hurricane, usually the biggest danger of a hurricane, lo aleinu, the biggest danger of a hurricane are not necessarily the high-speed winds, it's the flooding, because the flooding breached the, what's it called? The sandbags and the, al tiftach peh, the levee, thank you, the breached the levee. So the mabul flooded the world. Why was that mida keneged mida? Because the world is set up with boundaries. There's a husband and a wife, and you respect that boundary. But they didn't. What were they called, by the way? Batimalei Haaretz? Hamas. Hamas. This is not a new story. Hamas filled the world. Anarchy and chaos. How did it function? Without boundaries. That's your wife, but I'm attracted to her. That's your money, but I want to take it. That's your food, but I'm hungry. They had zero respect for boundaries. They violated, kidnapped, held captive that which wasn't theirs in terms of women, money, things. And therefore, if you can't violate boundaries, Hashem says, you want to know what a world with no boundaries looks like? No problem. I'll take away the boundaries and the world is covered in a flood that destroys it. A world without boundaries. Hamas is the chaos, corruption, and anarchy that comes from having no boundaries, breaking through a fence, taking and kidnapping people, horrifically doing things to them with no respect for borders and for boundaries. That always has been, that is, and please God, we can eliminate that ever being. That is what Hamas is, no boundaries. So they wanted to kill Noach, says Reb Berenbaum. You know why? Because Noach has boundaries, building a teva. This is my boundary. This is my wife, these are my children, these are my things, you live yours, I have mine. There are boundaries, there are boundaries. We want no boundaries, chaos and anarchy, moral corruption and decay, and you're promoting and living boundaries? They wanted to kill him. Misham yarda sina la'olam, har Sinai. We who model for the world boundaries, when they want to blur those boundaries, there's no male, there's no female, there's no monogamy, there's no... All the boundaries that have held man together, with all the progress we're making technologically, AI and otherwise, morally we are regressing. Make no mistake, 2025 Tavshin Pei Vav, technologically and medically we are progressing. Morally, we are regressing even faster. The boundaries that civilization has held for a long time, we can define them. We know what genders are. We know what relationships are. We know the definition of marriage. We know we've had definitions and we're losing those values and those definitions. And that's no coincidence. No coincidence. This is a partial perspective for today. That when boundaries are blurred, anti-Semitism goes up. Why? This is as old as Noah and his ark. Because those who are blurring the boundaries have no use or patience for those who are maintaining and holding on to them. And when there's a segment of society, when there's a people who embrace and hold on to those boundaries, when the world wants to blur them and eliminate them, there's a spike and a rise of anti-Semitism. They wanted to kill Noach for what he stood for, and they want to kill us for the same reason. For the same reason. So Shmuel Berenbaum is tracing this challenge, this problem. He didn't live to see in our time, but all the way back, it goes all the way back to Noach. Perches Pasuk Ches. Chapter 8, verse 8, bottom of page 36. Noach sends the Yonah, he sends the dove, to see whether the waters had subsided from the face of the ground. Why did he send them? Rashi tells us, Medrash Tanchuma, Hayetzarch Noach Latzis Manateva. Since the water had receded, it was time to leave the ark. But he said, "Bershus Hakadosh Baruch Hu nechnasti, bo atav b'chol beis chalateva, I only entered when he invited me. I'll only leave when God says it's time to go. So if Noach is only going to leave when God says it's time to go, why send the dove? He sent the dove to go explore, come back, report. Has the water receded? Is it safe to go out? But why bother? If you're not going to leave until God says to go, why send the dove? It's a good question, no? Says Rishon Berenbaum, now it's time to rebuild the world anew. Umemela, there's a big avoda, and that takes preparation. That takes preparation. If you need to rebuild the world and you need to start again, you don't wait for God to invite you out. You start looking around and preparing. What do you need to do? Yesterday I was texting with a friend who had some theories about the survivors in the Holocaust and Parshas Noach. Holocaust survivors and Parshas Noach. Noach comes off the Teva. The first thing he does is plant a vineyard and have a drink. And Hashem is critical of Noach, that he has a stiff drink. What's the criticism? He says chulin, because Noach was living a holy life and he made it chulin. He made it mundane. Wasn't he entitled? That's a long time in an ark cleaning up after the elephants and giraffes and feeding the lions and the tigers. He saved the whole world. He wasn't deserved a nice stiff drink. On the rocks, no rocks. Everyone thinks on the rocks is a fancier way, but if you're a feinschmecker, you know that on the rocks is not, it's an amateur way to drink. You add a little bit of water to open up the flavor, you make a l'chaim and you drink. So Mistama Noach knew how to drink properly. A l'chaim was not on the rocks. He had a little bit of water. There was plenty to go around at the time. And he had a l'chaim. Why are we critical of Noach? So my dear friend, Reb Tzadok, he conjectured, his theory was, when Noach took that drink and he was processing and he was healing from his having survived the destruction of the world, he lost the edge and the drive he needed to rebuild. And that's what Hashem was critical of. Our survivors, our heroes, they didn't process. And we know that because just ask their children. There's a researcher whose parents used to live in our neighborhood. Rachel Yehuda did a lot of research, actually scientifically showed it in the genes, in the very DNA of second and third generation, became absorbed attributes and traits of Holocaust survivors who didn't necessarily process, go to therapy, work through, because when they got off their ark of survival, when their world was flooded and destroyed, their focus was on one thing only, which was to rebuild, to rebuild. It's actually beyond remarkable to think what they did and what they accomplished, the communities, the yeshivas, the schools, the kashrus, the Erev, the state of Israel, what they did. Had they paused and hesitated to plant a vineyard and have a drink and go for therapy and process, who knows if our world would ever exist. They didn't. That was his theory, and it's a fascinating theory of really learning from our parsha about surviving the destruction of a world or the world and what it means and what it takes to then focus on building the next world. I told him, I'll tell you, it's interesting. A lot of Holocaust survivors didn't talk about their own experience. Their children, dates, places, experiences were left and cloaked in mystery. But fascinating, when they had grandchildren, all of a sudden, they would tell a grandchild. They would open up at a Pesach Seder. They might come speak in that grandchild's school. Why? Why didn't they tell their own children, but they only told their grandchildren? So a theory is because they weren't ready to tell their children when they didn't know that there'd be a continuity and a future and a world. They didn't want to burden their own children with the pain of what they went through. But once they had grandchildren and great-grandchildren, once they saw that there was a future, there was a tomorrow, now they were prepared to tell their story. Now they could process by first sharing a little bit. There are parallels. There are parallels between Noach, the destruction of a whole world. You think about these hostages who came home. I read Elisha Rabi's book over Yontif. The whole book is heartbreaking. The last page is devastating. But he says the only thing that kept him alive those 400 plus days in captivity was believing that that his wife and two daughters were alive. The moment he was released, he found out that they had been killed. He emerged to a world that was destroyed. His world was destroyed like Noah. How do you build tomorrow? This parsha is the architecture of what unfortunately, tragically, has been the story of our people over and over again. So Rav Shmuel Berenbaum suggests, why did he send the dove? He wasn't going to exit until Hashem said, it's time to leave. But if you have to build, if you have to rebuild a world, you can't wait. You have to be ready, you have to plan, you have to look, you have to know. Pasuk Yud, you might recognize this, those who just said it. Vayizkor Elokim, Perches Pasuk Yud. We're going to turn now to Rav Soloveitchik. Perches Pasuk, sorry, not Pasuk Yud. Vayizkor Elokim es Noach. Perches, where's Vayizkor Elokim es Noach? I lost the place. Pasuk Aleph. Sorry, Perches Pasuk Aleph. Vayizkor Elokim es Noach, vayizkor l'chayv v'yizkor l'behemah asher itoh b'teiva. God remembered Noach and all the animals that were with him in the ark. Vayavir Elokim ruach al ha'aretz vayashoku amayim. And he brought a wind and the water withdrew. On those words, vayizkor Elokim, Rav Soloveitchik in his Chumash writes, this pasuk is the first cited in the Zichronos section of Rosh Hashanah. So we all just said Zichronos on Rosh Hashanah. And the first pasuk in the section of the special Musaf, the section of remembering, is this pasuk God remembered. One theme of Zichronos is divine providence. God sees and remembers everything. He is concerned simultaneously with the universe as a whole, as well as with each person individually. The moral corollary to this idea is the notion that one should never discount the value of the individual. Just as God exhibits both universal and individual concern, so too should man. One should thus not dedicate all of his efforts on behalf of the communal needs while ignoring individual needs. Hashem is concerned with infinity itself, both in the historical sense regarding all generations of mankind and in the physical sense regarding the boundless cosmos. At the same time, it remains concerned with each and every individual. Noah was rescued from the flood for two reasons. First, through Noah, humanity is saved. Second, Noah was saved as an individual he was deserving. Even had humanity been saved by another means, Noah himself would have been spared on his own merits. So Torah tells us, Vayizkor Elokim es Noach. We have to simultaneously see the whole, the collective, the community, but also not lose the forest for the trees. You have to see and know and love every individual. Rabbi Howard, Zichron Levracha, that was one of his greatness. Every conversation with him since I met him many years ago, he used the words, he framed conversations about Klal Yisrael. What are we doing for Klal Yisrael? What is the agenda? What are the challenges for Klal Yisrael? He was a Klal Yisrael thinker, but who also cared for each and every Jew. You can't care about the Klal so much so that you don't see the Prat, the individual person. Perek Tes, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Moving along, chapter 9, rebuilding the world, the covenant Hashem made with Noach. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, top of page 42. Hashem made a bow as the sign and the symbol, the rainbow, with the world. Says Rabbi Sachs, we're back in the new Rabbi Sachs Chumash. When we read Bereishis and Shemos superficially, it seems as if the covenants of Noach, Avram, and Sinai are the same, but they're not. The covenant of Avram and Sinai are covenants of faith, but the covenant, the bris of Noach, says nothing about faith. The world has been almost destroyed by a flood. All mankind, all life, with the exception of Noah's ark, has shared the same fate. There's a famous prophecy in Isaiah that one day the wolf will lie down beside the lamb. So far, it has only happened once. Where? In Noah's ark. Why there? Not because they were friends, but because otherwise they would drown. That is a covenant of fate. In the Noahide covenant, Hashem is saying, never again will I destroy the world, but I cannot promise you that you will never destroy it, because I've given you free will. All I can do is teach you how to not destroy the world. Isn't that so interesting, that formulation? Hashem says, I make you a promise, I will not destroy the world, but I don't promise you, you won't destroy it. This code, the covenant of Noah, has three dimensions. The first is the sanctity of human life. Second is the integrity of the created world. If we read the chapter carefully, we see that five times Hashem insists the covenant of Noah is not merely with humanity, but with all life on earth. The third is the symbol, the rainbow. We first suggest this sign represents the white light of Hashem refracted into the infinite shadings of the spectrum. This is what I have called the dignity of difference. Unity in heaven creates diversity here on earth. These three dimensions define the covenant of faith. Note, the covenant of fate precedes the covenant of faith, because faith is particular, but fate is universal. Without these foundations of human solidarity, we cannot and we will not survive. A beautiful insight by Rabbi Sacks. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Skipping right along, we have the descendants of Noach, a long list, the genealogy, to Perek Yud Aleph. Now we move to the story of Migdal Bavel, the Tower of Babylonia, of Bavel. And here, we have an insight back by the Liskarov, the Achpri Tvua. The whole earth was one language and of common purpose. One language and of common purpose. In fact, before we see the Achri Tvua, I'll tell you, what was the problem? Migdal Bavel. So one understanding of the problem was that they wanted to, Nivner Lanu Ir, we're going to build a tower, a city, Rosh HaBashamayim, we'll build a city and a tower that will pierce and penetrate the heavens, Vinasa Lanu Shem, and we'll make a name for ourselves. And one problem is arrogance and ego, honor. They wanted a name. You know, this God, why are you always talking about God? You know who I am, what I've done? Why are you saying God's in charge? I'm in charge. Nasa Lanu Shem, they wanted a name. They wanted to be influencers. They wanted followers. We are meant to have influence, but I don't know that it was ever a Jewish value to be an influencer. We're supposed to be mashpia, have influence. I've spoken about this and written about this several times because I think it's a challenge in our time. We should be mashpia. We should influence the world with goodness and with example. But to be an influencer as a career choice is a different question. Not necessarily bad. There are people doing extraordinary, wonderful, remarkable, beautiful, positive things. But it's something we have to think about and be careful with. So says the Ach Pritvu, let's start with the Liskarov. The generation of the flood who had no boundaries, they didn't want to accept the yoke of heaven. And therefore everyone stole from their friend, violated their friend's marriage. The Dora Flaga, Laher Echad L'Chaveru. Now we get the Tower of Bavel. So the last story, the flood story, are people who are violating boundaries, could care less about the people around them. Now we get to a story where everyone is getting along. Everyone's cooperating. Everyone's collaborating. Just not for a good purpose. Now they think, so we were divided, morally corrupt. A flood came and wiped that out. We got another chance. We said, oh, that was bad. We're not supposed to steal and rob and violate marriages. No, we're supposed to have boundaries and mutual respect. We're supposed to get along. So now they got along. But what united them was a common enemy. And what was their common enemy? God. He's not in charge. He's not in control. It's us. It's our power, our intellect, our ego. Be'emes Chazal say, they're one people. They are united in this common enemy, me. I need to divide them. And what's the punishment in our parsha? He creates the United Nations. The big punishment. I wish I were joking. The big punishment in our parsha, it is a severe punishment that we continue to suffer from today. He created the United Nations. He created separate nations. Separate nations. That was the answer and the antidote. If you're using unity for uniformity, it's a problem. Uniformity is the problem. That's what Rav Hirsch was saying. The rainbow is the answer to uniformity. Because there's one ray of light of Hashem refracted into all these beautiful colors. We're still allowed to, by the way, talk about the rainbow. We're still allowed to. Nobody could take the rainbow from us. The rainbow belongs to all of us. We could still talk about the rainbow. And the rainbow should remind us immediately, we should think about the rainbow. The rainbow is the image of godliness and diversity. That Hashem is one ray of light refracted into 8 minyanim on this campus. Nesach Ari, Nesach Sfard, Ashkenaz, Eduta Mizrach, Hashkama, Beis Medrash, Neitz. All the colors of the rainbow from the one ray of light, because the answer to uniformity is unity, but a unity with diversity. You know, I care a lot about this because it's the tagline of our shul. diversity, not divisiveness, unity, not uniformity. So Hashem got rid of the uniformity by dividing the tower and by spreading people out. Soloveitchik also has a comment on this. Hava nivlelanu ir. What was their drive and motivation? They wanted to make a city. The Dor HaMabul represented orgiastic man, the man of pleasure. This generation was dominated by the quest for hypnotic pleasure, for compulsive hedon, for uninterrupted engagement in the aesthetic experience. Western man personifies the Dor HaMabul. The Dor HaFlaga, with its apex touching the heavens, does not represent orgiastic man. Dor HaFlaga represents authoritarian man, man who wanted to rule not only the earth but the heavens as well. The Dor HaFlaga was not pleasure addicted. The Dor HaFlaga was a power-hungry band of fanatics who wanted to rule the heavens as well as earth, scoffing at faith in God, human weakness, the very idea of individual human dignity. The cliché had utter contempt for ordinary men. Even though the Torah portrays the Dor HaMabul, Dor HaFlaga ideologies existing in two different seemingly unrelated generations, it is clear that a hedonistic society inexorably evolves into a tyrannical society. A pleasure-conscious individual is ready prey to the scheming of a power-hungry evil mind. The Dor HaFlaga thus necessarily followed Dor HaMabul. In modern times, this is what occurred in Germany in the 1930s. Germany was an orgiastic society seeking pleasure and enjoyment where the flesh ruled and determined human aspiration. It was an overindulgent, permissive, hedon, drunk, flesh-intoxicated society that ultimately promoted overindulgent, permissive, hedon, drunk, dominion of evil, tyranny, and madness. In the Aleinu Tefillah, the hedonistic society is called B'nei Basar, children of the flesh, while the authoritarian society is called Rishei Aretz, the evil of the earth. One leads into the other. If you begin with overindulgence in hedonism, pleasure, then you end with authoritarianism, and you end with despot leaders, and you end with this oppression and tyranny that we see even still now in our time. We got almost to the end. Thank you again for adjusting to the new time this week. Back on our regular schedule, Emir Tashem, next week. Have a wonderful day. We should have Besoros Tovos, Yeshuos V'Nechamos.